hand in hand. As we take off, we got our home flight plan. It's a non-stop flight, but I'm loving you. As we take off on the go, we don't need air traffic control. It's a non-stop flight, but I'm loving you. As we begin to gain altitude, just like no other love is true. It's a non-stop flight, but I'm loving you. Well, around the world, many things I've seen.
Welcome to another edition of No Biz Like Showbiz with your host, Randall Rutledge, and
James Turner, Mr. Las Vegas.
Live a little
bit, buddy.
Pretty good. How you doing?
I'm doing good. It's been an interesting couple of weeks with my little back injury here, but I'm strolling through it. Everything is great. We've got a beautiful sunset here in fabulous Las Vegas. A lot of stuff going on. And just short of our pre-show briefing, which we didn't quite get to do, so we'll kind of mix that in here on the air because we've got a lot of information. The Palms today started their NHL awards over here at the Palms, and of course all of the hockey stars and other celebrities are there. Saw George Maloof, who owns the Palms there, been doing very well. Now they have the red carpet that goes right through the casino.
Wow.
I mean, they do the red carpet right through the casino. And that was at 3 o'clock today. Was over there for a little bit. Those can be a long time because you're standing there waiting. I was going to actually go over there and get some shots and some film, but today there's just no way I could stand over there all day and straddle through all that stuff because they stroll in all day. But anyway, so that's going on over there today. Tonight is the award, so a lot of people there. But I'll tell you something, and again, something I've noticed, and something with Stevie Nicks that I wanted to make a note of, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners share this, is that, and you know, there was a couple of people, I think one guy was a hockey star, I don't even know, because I honestly don't pay attention to sports. If it doesn't involve film and television and entertainment, or something that's radically going to change the world, I don't sit around and watch football.
Well, I went to a fight one time and a hockey game broke out.
Yeah, right. But the note I wanted to make, and there was another tall, older gentleman walking through, because this happened twice, and just even the short time I was there, and on both instances, these guys are top celebrities. I mean, really, they were just strolling through, Randall, and of course, there was just a couple of people there even. It wasn't a mass mob, but one guy, we were actually, as well as one of the fabulous tips we have and stuff that we share personally that we do, from Las Vegas to film, television, entertainment, radio, it doesn't matter what it is, free buffet, slot play, stuff today. You want a little money, and it costs us $10 and something cents. So that's the wonderful benefits of being a local. But anyway, so we were, and there was just one guy with the older guy, and he was wanting an autograph. Now, the guy wasn't swamped. He was just strolling through, and he said, afterwards, after the thing and blah, blah, it was just one kid. Another guy, there was just a couple of people. Maybe I can count them on my one hand, probably three, maybe four. If that, they were just strolling through, I'm sure that, they weren't going somewhere, but they weren't hasty. They shined them on. Now, I saw Stevie Nicks do this one time when I was doing the Radio Music Awards. Now, she was in an empty hallway, a huge hallway, even going down to, I think, the production offices and just to the hotel from the showroom, and just had a couple of people with her. There wasn't anybody even around other than me walking through on my way to somewhere, and some folks asked her for an autograph, and she said no. That totally turned me off.
Well, that's kind of ridiculous.
No excuse. ever, exactly, there was no excuse ever for these guys ever not to sign an autograph. That was one thing that I loved when I did the Radio Music Awards the first year it was here, and or it was Billboard, I don't remember, and it was Garth Brooks, there was Leanne Rimes, there was tons of them, all the acts there, and Garth Brooks was the most people person. He was standing there talking in a conversation with a few people in the middle of a conversation. People would come up, no problem, every single time. He will sign autographs all day long. There was no excuse. These people are your fans.
Mm-hmm.
You should be signing an autograph. It just takes 2 seconds. Absolutely.
Another thing they don't realize is the general public, the ticket buying public that goes to see your movies, the music buying public. If you are in the public eye, you are of celebrity status, you're making $20 million plus per film. It's the buying music buyers and the ticket buyers and the folks that buy the tickets to go to Broadway, the circuses, that are making these people their living. Basically, the way I look at it, the average person that buys the ticket or the CD paid for their car, their homes, their lifestyle, the lavish lifestyle. That's the way I look at it.
Right. And that's where, you know, I think part of the soul of this show, Randall, and that's why we do what we do on both sides, the positive and the negative, because that's the real life. That's real world. It doesn't matter what you do. And show business and the entertainment industry is what it is in its own right. And we love it. And even though we talk about things you need to be careful of, protect yourself of, or things, we cover everything. Because there are things that, as this instance, and there are the artists that really, truly I love a lot are the ones that do, when they get up there and accept an award, I don't care if it's the CMT Awards that was on the other night, I mean, whatever, they're thanking God. They're thanking their fans. They're thanking their family. They're thanking their friends, and they're saying, it's because of you. You're the reason why I'm here. And they appreciate it.
Well, if you go back to Ernest Tubb.
And they know where they come from.
If you go back to Ernest Tubb, the country singer from years ago, I mean, he's been passed away since toward the early to late 1980s. But at the end of each show, he would spin his guitar around. On the backside of his guitar, he had specially put on there the word thank you. And he would rotate that guitar at the end of his show so that his fans could see the word thank you on the back of his guitar.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, that's one thing that a lot of artists show business folks and those that you really appreciate the most are the ones that do that. Now, I certainly go out. I'm not, you know, Tony Bennett or anything like that, and I certainly aspire to be a nature of a lot of different artists, because when I sing, even as you know, I sing a variety of songs. I like a variety of music. And when I sing it, and I appreciate and sing for what the artist has done. But even when I'm out singing at the Bootlegger and all that, which is the showcase, more of a showcase format than just going on karaoke. But when I go out, and even when I'm up there and I'm singing a song, and I'm doing it not because I'm just drunk and want to sing karaoke, I want to get up and sing and do it seriously, as you know, and you share the same thing. I mean, it's just not a drunken party out with my friends. There are a lot of serious singers out there who do that. But even at that, number one, I always say, I've worked at this song, because when I do a song, I sing it 100 times, folks. I sing it 100 times. I make sure I'm on it. I'm a serious singer. I make sure I nail it. And I do it exactly as close to as the artist did it, and then I do it my own way. But I do it, which is the way you're supposed to do it, like the artist does it, in like kind. But anyway, and I say, I hope you like it. If you like it, please let me know. And when I go out there and people say, God, you sound, I do a Billy Joel song, Elton song, this is the truth. Elton John doesn't matter. Man, that was great. That was better than Elton John. That sounded better than Billy Joel, which is my goal. Because just the, and I can't explain it, it's just the tone that I carry and what I do with it. You'd have to hear it to understand it. Randall knows. We've been out singing. He's heard me sing, and we've done stuff together. But even on just that phase, when people say that, it means a lot to me, and I appreciate that because that's what gives me the fuel for the fire, you know, and gives me the confirmation, as all artists do, and they all know that. But when you don't appreciate it and you really don't give the time for the fans back to the signing of autographs, you know, and I've, believe it or not, I've signed them. You sign them.
Absolutely.
And anytime, absolutely. I don't care if it's on their napkin or their boob. I prefer the boob. But, you know, I'll sign them. So, you know, so in any case, it was just amazing. And it just, to me, that's no class. It's just no class. And you're taking advantage of what you do. You're taking advantage of the business. And you're taking advantage of the fans. I mean, you might as well not tip. I mean, it's not like not tipping or saying thank you. Because that's what it is saying thank you, absolutely.
Yep.
So, anyway, so that was going on. On to something else. It was yesterday or the day before. And only because I've had a setback the last couple of weeks, not getting into that, but I would have been down there to, because we're going to have a website, and we're working on a website to post all this stuff, just because it's fun and interesting, and it only happens in one town, and that's fabulous, Las Vegas, Nevada. But they, Cirque du Soleil, was the initiator on this, of course, but in front of the Bellagio, they again, and there's been a lot of that going on actually lately, of breaking the Guinness Book of World Records on the amount of people on stilts.
Wow.
So, they were all out. I think there was 100 and something here. They were doing it all across the country. And I think they were going for a few hundred. I don't know what the record was. We'll find the news out here shortly. But I think throughout the country, and I'm talking New York and all the places that they have their shows. We have six shows, seven coming, which we'll have some news on that here with the MGM City Center. But they had close to 2,000.
Wow.
Across the country, Randall. Everybody on stilts, and they're marching up the strip on stilts. And I'm not talking like the 10-foot tall stilts or anything like that. They were, you know, 4 feet or whatever, but they're stilts. So they had all of the Cirque du Soleil from all the different shows dressed up, and they were out there on stilts, and other people that were in the shows on the stilts, and we're going to breaking the Guinness Book of World Records for that. So that was great. That was interesting and fun.
Oh, I got to
see a little bit of that.
Yeah, I got to tell you something. I'll be speaking with the guy tomorrow. It's not solidified in stone yet, but there's a possibility I'll be hired as a line producer for a film that's going to be shot in Atlanta this fall, entitled Prodigy, with a budget of $10,500,000.
So, nice.
I will be talking to the guys tomorrow. They want to interview me tomorrow via telephone. And again, I haven't secured it yet, but keep my fingers, my toes, and my eyes crossed.
Oh, that's great. And I wish you the best of luck with that. Now, before we get on from here, let's talk about that. What is a line producer? Let's share that with everybody.
Well, basically, what
you're
a...
You're not going...
Huh? Exactly. Well, he oversees, you know, the line producer, I don't want to say he or she, or a he, she, person. Whatever the case may be.
It would be the line person.
They kind of oversee, one of their functions is they oversee the budget. They try to ensure that the production does not go over budget because, as well as I do, that is highly frowned upon in this industry, especially this industry. A line producer's function is, the main function is ensuring that the film comes under and definitely does not go over budget.
Right. So a line producer takes care of the front line arrangements with the cost and setting up of things within the budget.
They're also one of the first people to be employed on the film's production by the producer and the executive producers.
Right. And so we'll give a little more detail on that.
And your line producers are rarely involved in the development of the project, but they do play a crucial role in cost in the production in order to provide investors and, again, like I was saying, to ensure that the, you don't go over budget. They want to retain the investors' confidence in the project. And he or she also supervises the preparation of the film. Well, again, we're going back into budgetary responsibilities, but they supervise the preparation of the film's budget, and they do the day-to-day planning, running the production. They're usually employed on a freelance basis.
Right, as mostly
and
all.
Yeah, you're going to work 18 to 20 hours a day. for 6 weeks. On a $10,500,000 budgeted film, I would say, whether I get this job or not, whoever becomes the line producer for this $10 million film, I would say 12 to 18 weeks from start to finish before the film's ready for distribution, or to start shopping it for distribution. Whichever theatrical release or straight to DVD. I'm not sure as of yet. I really won't find out much information until I speak with them tomorrow. But, the line producer also has creative input to the production.
Right.
And he or she is also often credited as a co-producer.
Can be. That's right.
Yep.
That's right. Well, yeah, and that's the thing with just a quick note here, Randall, is because the bridge between a lot of these jobs that we do in film and television, as I've said before, I've done I don't know how many things at the same time. Even when I was production assistant, I was production assistant, transportation, working with talent, assistant coordinator, stage, I'll do four or five things at the same time because, as I've said, being there is 80 to 90% of your quest because just being there, being available and being knowledgeable makes you very valuable,
right.
That's what keeps you working. Anyway.
Well, they're called line producers, too, because they can't start work until they know what the line is between the above-the-line cost, which relates to the writers, producers, directors, cast, and the below-the-line cost, which includes everything else, such as your crew salaries, your equipment rental, development cost, location, set design, all that crap, construction insurance, completion bonds, and all that good stuff.
Right. And so there's a lot involved, and it can be, and is, I'm not going to say can be, because it usually, especially a job like a line producer, is a very long day and very involved because you're involved with everybody. That's wonderful. I mean, good luck with that. That's fantastic.
I'm kind of hoping I get the, get that job, but I'm not going to hold my breath because I'm not the only one they'll be considering, but the email that I sent to these folks, I told them that they can pay me one flat rate and get five to ten positions out of me without having to hire those other 4 to 9 positions, from casting
right.
to hiring the extras, to music supervising, to production services, craft services. I mean, I'll do it all for, I mean, paying me $50,000 is still going to save you $250,000.
Yeah,
and
yet with a line producer, that being a little bit of a different story, mind you, because that is a much more involved, you might dabble in a few things to bridge, but you're not going to be doing craft service, I guarantee you that.
Well, no, I mean, I would delegate that to someone else. And
right, I mean, but a line producer is very, very involved, but in that instance, you can assist, you know, with the knowledge of any coordinating, and everybody ends up doing it. To be honest with you, a lot of people, you end up doing it.
I can secure them insurance, completion bond. I also told them, and I can do it, that once the film is complete, in the can, ready for theatrical release, I've got a couple of major production companies that have distribution arms that I can shop to them for the potential, for the possibility of theatrical release through them, through their distribution arm, which would be very viable to that production.
Right. Oh, absolutely. You know.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to make a note that, you know, people like you and me, Randall, I mean, people have to understand that when you're, you know, you're not just seeking your own thing. You're more really wanting to learn the business from the ground up. And no matter how long it takes you or whatever, I mean, yeah, it's great and wonderful just to be found and be a star and make all the great money and, you know, just have a blah, blah, blah. But, you know, when you're in a position like that and you really don't learn the business, I think there's a lot of life experiences, of course, that you shortchange yourself, and that's a great thing. And all of us want that. But there's a side to doing what we do and learning the business, working and doing all the different jobs in the business that that are so valuable and fun, that make you valuable, just like we're talking about. It makes you valuable. Then, of course, when you love something like that and anything you do, that's certainly what you want to do.
Right. Well, too, like when I actually speak to them tomorrow, I didn't want to put everything. I still left some things out of the email because I'm going to ask them.
Right.
I hope you have allowed for at least a 10% contingency in the budget to basically cater to any unforeseen circumstances. You know, so because you never
right.
know what's going to come down the pike, and if you don't allot for that, you're going to be in some trouble.
Well, and that I've seen in a lot of situations, as with any job, it's all relative, but, you know, and we have worked with from very small little productions. I can only speak for myself, of course, on experiences and stuff, but, you know, we share that in a lot of different ways. You've done transportation and producing and a lot of different stuff, as well as I have. In doing what we do, but you know, those things are so important. You know, just so important to learn that when you get in a production and you see these guys waste money. I mean, because
right.
when you're doing something, when you're booking a location, okay, we'll talk locations. You're booking a location. You have a certain amount of time. You have a certain time. You've got a certain amount of time. For so much money to get what you need to get done. And if you're really efficient and you're smart and you do a good job, you can get it done for a decent and a valuable amount of reasonable cost. But these guys don't prepare. When you're not prepared and that stuff happens, I've sat there fumbling around for I don't know how long because it wasn't handled properly. And they've wasted so much money just sitting there.
Oh, yeah, I don't know how many times I've seen that. I mean, basically...
We've had to come back at another time, excuse me. We've had to come back. Something was screwed up because, to be honest with you, they really, and you know this, Randall, they hire people who don't know flip.
A lot of incompetence. I mean, the thing is...
Yes, thank you.
I see where you're going with this, too, because there is absolutely no qualifications can prepare you completely to be a line producer because you have to have considerable industry experience, which pertains to years in film and television or commercial production.
That's right. I mean, because number one is I know in my career in film and television, when I got started, I wasn't in any, for example, that the Film Commission has out here in Nevada, which is, of course, one of the first things that you do when you want to start out. But they have a book that lists, you know, everything you would need. If you're having a production here, everything you would need is in there. And, of course, sifting through that and finding good people is within that list of production folks.
Well,
you know,
a line producer.
There's a list of them.
Now, a line producer, too, must also have qualifications in health and safety.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things to consider, but my point is that it's your reputation. You know, I never advertised. I was never in any in the Film Commission book. Everybody else was. This is true. This is the truth. And I started as a production assistant. Actually, I started in my first movie I was featured in. And from then on, it took off. I resigned from one of my jobs, kept one for a base because I had a very flexible schedule, could pretty much do what I want as long as I had everything taken care of. But it was all on reputation and just word of mouth. That's what it's about. And when you kick butt, and you're just really having fun and doing it and enjoying it and learning it, all those things and learning all of the aspects of, because you cannot grasp the entire scope of it all, as with anything, without doing it. But my point is that it's the reputation. It's that's how a lot of people stay in the business, not only because they're connected, because it is, and unfortunately there are, you know, the glitches and that's one of the things I don't like about it because a lot of the people that are chosen, as with any job, whether it's a family member or not, is that just because they're a friend or you know them or they're family doesn't mean they're qualified. And people
exactly.
get put in these positions, including film and television, because they're friends or they're buddies or whatever, and they're doing
and in some cases
they've never done it before.
The person putting the money up, I saw this happen with a friend of mine, a friend of mine's production. His name is Eric Lee. He's also in the Black Belt Hall of Fame. But one of these investors that invested in his film said, I will put up the money, but my niece has been wanting to be an actress forever, so you have to write her in a major part. The girl was terrible. She couldn't act her way out of a wet paper sack saturated in butter 15 minutes in the microwave. So Eric told me, I guarantee from this point forth, I will refuse the money before I will ever hire another investor's family member to be in a lead role in my film. I said, well, just blame it on the casting director. Even if you're not hiring a casting director, delegate someone to pretend to be the casting director and say, well, the best I can do for you is to set you up an audition through our casting director because we're under contract with a casting company. We can't just place someone because of contractual obligations.
Uh-huh.
He says, oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, you know, again, with the audition couches and stuff like that within the business, you see it. You know,
yeah.
It's not I mean, and the people that work in the business, you know, you see it, people see it, we see it watching, and it's like, what the heck are they doing there? Who in the heck casted them there? Casting is a very important thing. That's another subject, and certainly broad subject as well, but even bringing that up, yeah, I mean, even just in that, you just, because there's just, you know, you have to capture the character, you have to be able to be experienced to get into the role and understand all that stuff, and there again, just like you said, just because they're a relative, that happens all the time. And you just can't do that. Not that they can't do that, and it hasn't been done, and it hasn't been successful. But you just can't say okay just to do it because of that reason of it being a demand or relative or something like that. They don't understand. It just right. doesn't work that way. And I think that when you what I would do, I would say, here's how I would handle it. I would say, okay, and I would do a test screening. I would say, okay, and I would take the person that I've chosen, or the person who, whatever, if I was a producer, if I was the casting director, or whatever, it doesn't matter, or director, whatever, in that final say-so, and say, okay, let's shoot these scenes. This is what we're doing. Now let's be objective, let's look at it. And let's watch the playback or the daily, and let's see and compare the two. And let's see
how the inflection is on the dialogue
exactly.
from the
and
actor.
Let them see for themselves. And certainly you want to help them or whatever, because, you know, it's just like, hey, this is just reality. This is it. This is the scene. This is what you are, who you are, why you're doing it, and what you're doing it for, because that's the scope. And then here's the other person, and then you can match. Well, how many takes did it take? Which is semi-immaterial, because when you're talking about capturing the scene in its utmost optimal, expression, because
right.
that's what it is. It's an expression of an art of life that they can objectively see, okay, now, who would you, what do you see here? I mean, you're just going to have to spend the time doing it. Just so you don't blow, you certainly don't want to blow a production, you certainly, but you want to be realistic,
right.
and that's why I would handle
yeah.
it. Let's
go to a commercial break real quick here, and maybe when we come back, maybe Mac will be on with us too. So let's just go to commercial break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
As we take off on the go, we don't need air traffic control. It's a non-stop life, but I'm loving you.
Howdy, Randall Rutledge here. Listen to my show, No Biz Like Showbiz, here on www.bbsradio.com, Station 2, every Thursday at 7:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10:55 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Listen in and call in. Join me and my co-host, James Turner, if you want to learn the ins and outs of the entertainment industry. I also have a book out entitled From Movie City to Music City, USA. It's also available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and Tower and others. It's available from my website, www.randallrutledge.com. If you're considering pursuing show business, my book will save you years of trial and error, as well as hundreds and thousands of dollars that you don't have to spend. So catch my show, No Biz Like Showbiz, right here on www.bbsradio.com.
We taxi down the runway, hand in hand, as we take off, we got our whole flight plan. It's a non-stop flight, but I'm loving you.
He tried to tell her, and she thought it right. Hand in hand, they marched on through the night. He knew the answers she'd hoped to find. It'll just take a little time, just a little bit of time. It wasn't easy, but how could they fail? Though love can blind you just like a veil, He knew the price was worth the strain. There was so very much to gain. So much love was there to gain. And they flew so high that they lifted off the ground. They locked themselves away in the magic they had found. Every day they tried to make paradise their aim. In the end there's nobody to blame. There's never anyone to blame. Avoiding the shadows, well they struggled on. Went up and down, did right and wrong. Misunderstandings were put aside, and the gap became too wide.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to No Biz Like Show Biz. If you're out there listening, if you'd like to call in, call us toll-free, 1-888-228-4494. And we have Mac, our movie news and review guy. How you doing, Mac?
I'm doing fine. How's everybody tonight?
We're doing great, buddy. Glad to have you back.
Glad to be back.
So what's the big news and review there, buddy? How are things going?
Okay, if you want to call it big news and review, I went to see the remake of the the remake of Taking of Tom of 1-2-3, classics from the 1970s. And in all honesty, I was a little disappointed. And I think what happens on a remake is the theme stays the same, but then the storyline changes, especially if you've seen it. Now, if you didn't see it, this might have been an action film for you instead of a suspense film that it was back in the 70s. The acting, Denzel Washington, I can't say enough about him, or John Travolta, very good actor as well. But this was not by far their best work.
Now, I saw the previews for that and saw pieces of the film. And, of course, I love Denzel Washington, and we all know that that him and John Travolta are terrific actors. Pretty much anything they do is fantastic, even if it's not a fantastic and wonderful movie. Not only do they know that people will watch it because they're in it, but they can certainly make or break a film. They always make a film, even if it's not fantastic, but they can certainly make it more successful than it would be with anybody else. But my point being is that even just seeing that, and I don't know about the remake, and you're going to have to refresh us all on the storyline. It didn't look fantastic to me. In fact, I didn't like John Travolta's look, to be honest with you. On a personal note, with the little shaved goatee kind of thing, it's not his look. So, you know, all that little personal note. But I'm not familiar with the film itself. So why don't we start with that, Mac? What is the film about?
Okay, the film is about a gang of ex-employees of the transit district. And the plan and the plot was to take over, tell them 1-2-3, just one car, okay, and hold them for ransom. Okay, now that storyline, it changed somewhat, the characters changed somewhat in the remake, the theme was the same, and the outcome was a little bit different. The outcome in the new one was like a lot more violent. A lot of action, though. If you're into action, you'd like this film. But the difference, there was a suspenseful end in the original. And this one, well, you know what was coming. I mean, it was just so self-explanatory when you watched the film.
Uh-huh.
And wasn't that, wasn't the original in 1974?
I think it was 74. Walter Matthau. Walter Matthau, I think he was the supervisor. But this time, the role was played by Denzel Washington, and he was a person that was, let's say, a dispatcher, and he was under scrutiny because apparently he had bought some trains from Japan. So this is where the storyline starts to change from the original. You know, if you've seen the original, you really like the original, then you think the same thing is going to happen, but it doesn't. And that's where the disappointment starts.
Who plays the mayor in the new one?
Jenkins, you're going to help me. Sopranos,
Gandolfini?
Yes.
James Gandolfini.
Right, right.
Cool, cool.
Glad I could add a little 2 cents from there. Thank you, Mac,
I appreciate it.
Because I don't know about 1974, and I don't know about all that other stuff, because I'm not... So thanks for that. So James Gandolfini was in it. Okay, and he was the...
Now his part was very good. Of course, I like him anyway, from The Sopranos. He plays the tough guy. He still played the tough guy as a mayor. A lot of one-liners, you know, if you like to laugh here and there.
That's me. I'm a one-liner guy. I'm not a storyteller guy, like Randall and guys.
Anyway, this is a film that you're going to have to go out and see and make the judgment yourself.
Right.
Now, if you've never seen the original, you might like this one. If you have seen the original, you're going to be just a tad disappointed. Like I said, the theme is the same. Storyline is a little bit different.
You know what, Mac? That's what makes you a great critic. And I don't even like calling you a film critic or a movie critic, because you're not. You see things exactly... No, really, because you see things for exactly the way they are. You see the film exactly for what it is, whether it's compared to the original, whether it's issues with the actors or the story... Or their part, or whatever the case may be. But when you share it, it's like, oh, it just absolutely sucks, and that's all there is to it, or anything that you read in the paper, or you see on TV with these guys. Because, you know, I've read, and I'm glad we're bringing this up. And I know you, Randall, have done it. I know you, Mac, have done it. We've read reviews. We've read a film. Read about the film. They've given their opinion, okay, and it sucks, that the film stinks, or this is bad. And then you go see, and it's like, well, I don't see it that way at all. The film was great. I thought it was wonderful. I don't know where this guy... And see, that's what I like about you and how you're so wonderful, is because you say, well, you might like this, but and you may not like that, or you may like this about it, because everybody sees it... you know, other than the twist form of reality, but objectively and honestly, because even when the critics, and I know you know this, when they critic a film, it's like, I don't know how they got that.
Yeah.
Where did they get that this film was great, or this thing was going on, or that was it, or was it, or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what they ought to do? Sorry.
They ought to bring back the 1974 version and play it first, and then play the new version so people can compare the technology and the human interaction.
Right.
That would be a great experience.
Yeah, it would be.
Anyway.
Now, James, on the other hand, as far as DVDs that came out this week, here's one that I will recommend, and that's Crossing Over with Harrison Ford. I don't know if you've heard about it or seen it.
Excellent movie.
Deals with a very controversial subject at this time, and that's immigration. And it's a little bit of that. And it's kind of, if you saw Crash was got the Academy Award for Best Picture in 2005. It's reminiscent to that. It's Los Angeles, the different races, and how they impact on immigration. The storyline is great. A little sad towards the end and everything, but I won't tell the story, so I want everybody to go out and get a chance to rent the DVD, and I recommend it.
I'll have to rent
story.
That.
A lot of drama, but here's the kicker, though, James, here, and Randall, here's the kicker. Guess what else came out on DVD?
What?
Everybody's going, what?
Well,
Friday the 13th. Now, this supposedly, I don't know where this ends or begins. It's kind of like remaking the original from 1980. Now, they must have had 120 sequels to the old one. I watched this.
Go ahead.
Okay, I watched this today, and I haven't seen so much graphic violence since I went over to my in-laws for Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, this,
well, I've got two quick questions for you, Mac.
Yeah.
Any idea what the fare was, Subway fare was in 1974, and what was the price of first-run movies back then? That's your assignment for next week.
That's your assignment for next week. Well, the thing is, you know what it is, though? It's kind of like...
That's beautiful.
I can remember you guys are a lot younger than them. I'm sorry, I'm a lot older than you guys are. But the thing is, it's like this history teacher I had in high school.
I agree with you on that point.
This history teacher I had in high school, she didn't teach history, she remembered it.
Right.
So it's kind of like the same thing. But the thing is, you know, on the remakes, in all honesty, if you've seen it, you know, and you get caught up in a good storyline, then you see a remake and everything's been changed around, turned around like the theme is the same, but then you say, God, it's a little something like taking a film 1, 2, 3, towards the end it started to lose its credibility. Now you're going to an action film. You got cars flying all over the place, explosions, and what have you. You say, how is this guy, a mild-mannered dispatcher, able to run down the street, fire a weapon, and drive like a nut through Manhattan? So, you know, you scratch your head and you look and say, well, I don't know, it had potential maybe, but then no. On a scale of 1 to 4 stars, I'd give it a 2.
Especially with a city full of, like, what, maybe 10,000 cabs?
Yeah.
I wonder what the 2044 remake's going to be like.
Oh, man, that's, I don't know. I really don't know. It's hard to say. But
I'm sorry, just a quick note, Mac, is that what I found out the other day was that the original guy who played Jason in Friday the 13th lives here in Las Vegas. I forget his name, and I'm sorry for that, but believe it or not, a lot of people who are in the business actually live in Las Vegas. It's amazing. They almost live as much here as they do in Hollywood or L.A.
Really?
But I saw him the other day, the original guy, they were telling his story. And you wouldn't even think this guy's behind, of course, how would you know who's behind the mask unless it's actually Jason. But this guy was actually Jason. And it was,
yeah.
And he looks like a regular guy. I don't have my notes with me, but he does live here in Las Vegas, the guy who originally played Jason. So... Yeah, anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's amazing what makeup can do, huh?
Yeah.
For a hockey fan, yeah, right.
Yeah, you know what, but this Friday the 13th, they left an opening to do a sequel to this one. So they can basically start all over again. Who wants to see that many Friday the 13th with Jason continuously getting fried, died, burned, decapitated, and he keeps coming back? How is that possible?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a great point that you bring up. And just a note on that subject alone is on these remakes and the sequels. And one of the very few that they really could go on with is Lethal Weapon.
Mm-hmm.
They can do the Mel Gibson and Danny Glover thing with that Richard Donner. And Joel Silver are fantastic. Usually everything they do is great. But that is one with the sequels, although the four at this point. And I know they're making another one, I believe, out here shortly. But that is one, but very, very few, because they just... and it's not that even Jason or Friday the 13th couldn't do it, but as you see... Now, in your opinion on this, Mac, because you're the guru, is as they start making the sequels, as we've seen with them do several, after the first one, we always see, and usually we always know, the first one's the best one. They do it too, and it's like, oh God, why'd they bother, right? Very few films, and you have to be able to really see the whole scope of the concept, the storyline, and stuff like that, because some things don't last that way. They just can't last. And it's not even that probably that they can't. And getting to Friday the 13th, because that is a huge, that is one of the top rated spooky films, Halloween films, horror films of all time. And they've made, I think it's Friday the 13th, probably at this point. I, like you, I don't know if Randall knows, maybe you know, I don't know exactly what number this is, but we're getting up there. They've done quite a few. None of them, I don't think, have ever been as successful as the first one, who
right.
we know Jamie Lee Curtis was in as well. I think she was in a couple of them, of course.
We're like, what, about 10 of those films?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that.
Well, it's, you know,
just let me close, Mac, real quick. They get carried away on certain aspects of the film to where they lose the authenticity. Here we go with the remake thing again, just like you said, and then you can have it from here, right? Is they lose
yeah,
the care, and they start going into, well, there's excessive violence. We love the violence, you know, all that stuff, but the storyline is always more important.
Yeah, well, they also did the final chapter before they did the new beginning of Friday the 13th.
Yes.
And then they did part 6 after that. 7,
right.
8, 9,
exactly.
10. Jason or Freddy versus Jason.
Right.
But
right.
This was the most violent. I think this was the most violent one of all the Friday 13ths that I've seen. I mean, they exceeded themselves there. I mean, it gets to the point where it's just nauseating.
Believe it or not, and this is a true story. You know, in the business, in the film building, and this is something that's not rocket science, and folks, you can understand it, Mackie. I know you're going to know it. Randall, I know, understands or whatever. But it's not even the fact that when you do a film, because when I did the series here, the strip, and we did the first few episodes, especially the first one, I know they spent an enormous amount of money on the first
yeah.
one. That was part of the thing, and part of the issue was with the budget, of course. It's always, that's another show, another story. But my point being is when you're staying with the storyline, you're staying with the concept, and you're staying with the characters, you can actually save money and have a better film if you focus on those three things. If
yes,
stay
I agree
with those,
with you.
And would you agree with that?
I agree with you. Wholly, I agree with you.
Yep.
There's one.
There's two. I second that motion.
But you know what? James and Randall, what I've heard, though, actually the box office sales are down from this time last year. People are asking, where are the blockbusters? Other than Star Trek, everything is really down in comparison to this time last year.
Okay, now let's talk about Star Trek. I'm interacting with you here, and then you can have it again. I'm sorry, but I want to make some points here on this and get your thoughts on it, and just leading into this, because here we go. Now, there's been a lot of good films, actually probably the most in a decade of spurts. There may be a spurt of something. Of course, DreamWorks has done fantastic. The animation films have been wonderful with the graphics and the 3D and all that stuff. So those are really Disney. Those are probably, I think if you collectively brought those together, those are fantastic. Probably been the most profitable films, to be honest with you, because they really, really have. They've done a great job from the Aladdin, the Lion King, all that stuff. But in any case, even Star Trek now, here you go again. Now, I'm a Star Trek fan. Not the original Star Trek. It was okay. I love Star Trek The Next Generation. And I love that not only the series, but the films because of the things that it taught. Here we go, storyline, character, and I forget what the other one was right now. But they always stayed with that because it taught real things in life. I mean, all the movies that they make, and that was one thing I was disappointed about, the Vegas movies, is, yeah, everybody comes out and they do a Vegas movie, and The Hangover is looks like a good film. And again, I saw another Vegas film the other day. They've been making a few of those. But getting back to Star Trek, the point being is that this Star Trek, from what I've seen, is nothing like Star Trek. They have just gone way out there.
Oh, yeah.
On the
storyline's been changed
again,
see?
The storyline, the characters, everything, to where it's not even going to, I can already tell, it doesn't even feel like Star Trek. Because Star Trek was about discipline. It taught life, real life. It taught discipline. It taught authority. It taught teamwork. That's what I loved about the series, especially, and all those films, the Next Generation films especially, and, of course, the crossover with the, in fact, I think the movies of the original Star Trek that involved William Shatner were better than the series.
Yeah, it was.
Well, didn't Leonard Nimoy come back on the most recently released Star Trek as Old Spock or Older Spock or something of that nature?
Yes,
I think so. Yeah.
Anyway, so you know what I'm saying, and back to you, Mac. You know, it's just interesting how, and the point is they just go way off base, and they lose the essence of the nature of the film, mm-hmm, and the concept that's trying to be, whether it's a moral of the story, a life lesson of some kind, which people really love the most, or good wins over evil, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do, they should have made it brand new then, you know.
Right. I agree.
And do something else. Anyway, that's my point there with that. So go ahead.
Yeah, you know what? I saw the original Friday the 13th, 1980, I think it when it came out, and it was a high gear ratio. I mean, that movie.
1980. Oh, 1980. I'm sorry. Okay.
What do you think I said? 1980? And I'm not that old. No, 1980. It was a high scare ratio. It was a good scary movie. And they, you know, you can't improve on something that's good. It's like the old saying: if it ain't broke, you know, don't fix it. That type of thing.
Right.
But all those sequels, I think what happens is, it's all about money at the box office. You know, who cares, mm-hmm, if you get an Oscar nomination or anything, as long as you're making money at the box office. That's the most important thing. Look what Star Trek did. I mean, as a blockbuster, you know, the story and everything was just totally different than what we're used to, especially with people that grew up and watching Star Trek on TV and what have you. The producers, directors, really don't care. If it's bringing in the money, that's what it's all about.
So, yeah, and so they think, and is that truly the most important thing? I mean, is it really the most important thing if you're, you know, Cinevegas was just here, and you have all these independent film artists, and everybody from Dennis Hopper, everybody, it's just grown tremendously because people are making, even nowadays, just with the ease of the crossover from amateur to professional filmmaking,
yeah,
and things like that, i.e. the Blair Witch Project, which was a very successful independent film, made it to the big screen, and did very well. But, you know, people are really wanting to capture even the documentaries that people are making that make it to the the different categories on the award shows, from the Emmys to the Oscars and stuff like that, because they'll have the best independent film, documentaries, short films. Believe it or not, you can do a short film and be very successful.
Yeah.
Just because of the concept, the storyline, the characters,
the content,
and the content, right, yeah. I.e. what was just came out, and I'll close with that one on that note, is the one, the Slumdog.
A Slumdog Millionaire?
Exactly.
That India, the India film.
Exactly.
Do you think those guys really thought about the money?
Do you think those guys really thought about the money? I mean, they did, but I mean, what was their point? The story.
Yes. Yeah.
Of how deplorable their conditions are, and how poverty stricken a lot of those areas are in that country.
Yeah, it's a little depressing, though.
Yeah.
Well, but it was a successful
story.
It all depends on
what you like, you know, as far as entertainment is concerned. You know, if you like comedy, drama, suspense, or you want to see something that's going to be very depressing, you walk out of the theater and you're feeling down. You know, I saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and I walked out in there, and I felt like doing something nice for somebody.
Well, we're about to run out of time here, gentlemen. A couple minutes left, but we've enjoyed all that, Mac. I definitely appreciate your insight and your reviews and your movie news there.
Hey, thank you. And once again, thanks for having me.
Well, you fit right in, Mac. You're doing what you do best, and it's fantastic, and you always, you know, you remember the history as well as teach it, so.
I would have had a chance to review another movie. I know we're almost out of time. I would have had a chance, but they sent me. I went the wrong way, and they wouldn't. They pointed the exit to me, so I had to leave.
Did you get a bag of popcorn?
No, I didn't get that either. So,
well, those sorry dogs. When I come out in September, we'll just have to go do the same thing. There's strength in numbers, man.
Yeah.
Well, Mac, you are a great addition to the show, and this is what this is really something that I think that Randall, just in closing on the show, because we want to make this point. I think that you add a lot of wisdom and character to the movie news and review. You're the man, and it's just going to get better. And we appreciate you being on. I look forward to having you on next week and the week after.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate you guys having me. Thanks so much.
Are you having fun?
I'm having a lot of fun. I really am. That's the truth.
Good. Cool. Well, hate to shut this short, but hope everyone's enjoyed No Biz Like Showbiz, and we'll catch you next Thursday night. Until then, Randall Rodden signing off. Keep on dreaming.
And viva Las Vegas, baby.
So long, everyone.
Adios.
Amigos.
Yeah, back with us, Seth.